Welcome to Reframing Our Stories, the podcast. This podcast is about provocative conversations with beautiful thinkers about topics that matter and the stories that have helped them reframe their lives. Grab something cozy or put on your walking shoes and let's reframe. Welcome back to Reframing Our Stories. I am so glad that you came back to listen today. We're going to have a really great episode and I'm really excited for this one. I think it's a topic that's really important. So I'm excited for the guests because we're going to be talking about sexual education for those who have an intellectual or developmental disability. I'll be speaking with Anna Hayek and Marco Orlando. Anna works for Mad Hatter Wellness, a business that creates comprehensive sexual health education programming that educates, trains, and empowers people with intellectual disabilities and their support systems. She is a 200-hour certified yoga teacher, as well as a certified Yoga Calm youth instructor, and is certified to teach K-12, ESL, and Spanish. She uses these certifications within her sexuality education classes. Anna appreciates opportunities to empower people to connect to their breath, body, and community. Marco Orlando has gone through training to be a peer educator with the Empowered Together curriculum, which is about healthy relationships and sexual health, designed for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The lessons were created to be co-led by a professional educator and peer educator. He is on the board of directors for Speaking Up For Us, an organization in Maine that advocates to empower people living with developmental disabilities to speak up and take action in ways that improve their lives. All too often, we don't spend enough time or energy helping those with intellectual and developmental disabilities have these important conversations, and we don't consider the needs that they have, especially in wanting to have romantic relationships and especially in having a sex life, which many of them really do want to have. And so please enjoy this conversation that I have with Anna and Marco. Anna and Marco, I'm really excited to have you on my show.
It's really great to be here.
So often, right, people with in America, we do not do a great job with educating around sexual health education to begin with. Mm-hmm. And we do an even worse job when it comes to those with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about why Mad Hatter Wellness was created and the importance of the work that you all do?
Yeah, absolutely. So Mad Hatter Wellness was founded by Katie Thune in 2013. And Katie has a background in teaching health and special education. And she had been doing some teaching sex ed in a special education setting, and just really saw the gaps in knowledge that people had, as well as multiple cases of sexual assault came out and were reported through that teaching. And it really just became very clear to her that we needed to do more in this area. And so several years later, after she had started Mad Hatter Wellness, decided that writing a curriculum for people with disabilities was really something that needed to happen. And so we have our curriculum, Sexuality for All Abilities. That is something that, you know, can be used with anyone, but we really wanted it to be especially helpful to people with disabilities, intellectual and developmental disabilities. And then, you know, we also just want this information about sexual health education to be available and accessible to everyone. We see that as a human right. So everyone should be able to learn about their bodies and about healthy relationships and body autonomy, things like that just should be available and accessible to everyone.
So I can imagine people listening would be like, well, what does that even look like? So is there a way that you can kind of tell us a little bit more about what that even entails? Because I think sometimes people are just so confused or like don't even know how to broach the topic to begin with. And so then how would that look differently?
Sure. I mean, I think one of our like guiding principles is we assume ability, like we assume that people are going to be able to take away some sort of information from what we're teaching. And so, you know, not shying away from certain topics and thinking like, oh, these people aren't going to understand this, like that's doing people a disservice. Mm-hmm. And then it's like figuring out what people need to access that information. And sometimes it's simplified language, sometimes it's visual support, sometimes people really learn well through watching videos. Sometimes it's more experiential in terms of just like, noticing how boundaries feel and like kind of trying out some of those things and talking through some of those things. So with any education, I think any quality education, it's specific to the student. And so all of our classes look a little bit different depending on who's in the class and what conversations come up. But yeah, that's kind of a overview.
I love that you said it's the needs, right? Like I feel I've been such a proponent lately of saying to people, what do you need? What does that look like? And how can we get that met for you? And what is, just what does that mean? Because I think so often I don't think we're given the permission to ask to even ponder the question, what do I need? And so for you all to do that, I think that's really great. So Marco, why is it so important to provide sexual health education to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities?
Honestly, I feel like these discussions should be happening more often amongst people with disabilities. I feel like a lot of times, a lot of those people are left out of those discussions. I think what ends up happening is other people seem to think we either don't need to know about this stuff or that this stuff shouldn't interest us. But we're all human. We all have the same needs and desires. We all want to love and to be loved and to be able to express those feelings in natural and healthy ways.
Most definitely. So one of the things that you all do within Mad Hatter is include mindfulness into your curriculum around sexuality and the body, which I love. So why do you do this, and what effect has it had?
Yeah, so I have a background in teaching yoga and mindfulness, and that's how I met Katie Thune, the founder of Mad Hatter Wellness, and we were doing that kind of work. And so it just became very clear to us that whenever we start a class, it's really helpful to begin with some sort of grounding practice to kind of come together as a group. And then when we're talking about sexuality, I mean, that topic can bring up so many feelings. People can be excited, they can be nervous, they can be like just grossed out and not want to be a part of the conversation at all. Like it's a wide range. So really just
Very
start.
loaded discussions.
So starting from a place of like, we always take some deep breaths. In some of our classes, we do some mindful movement just to kind of like connect and become present with where we are and what we're doing. And then, we'll delve into the topic and then we always end again with some deep breaths and with some sort of closing sort of relaxation or just a time to kind of let all that information settle in our brains. And we just find that no matter what we do, if we're training teachers, if we're working with elementary through adults, like it doesn't really matter. Like that format seems to really, and it helps us as teachers too, because sometimes as an educator, you're nervous to
A little
have the
nervous.
conversation. So also I think it's really helpful when we're thinking about boundaries because, sometimes people have communicated to us, like, I don't really know what my boundaries are. And that's so real that like we aren't always given a chance to connect with our bodies and listen and think like, okay, how do I feel about this situation, or what are my boundaries? And so, developing that awareness of checking in with ourselves can really help people kind of explore what their boundaries are.
What has been your experience, Marco, with the mindfulness and connecting your body?
I find it's been helpful. Just taking that moment to find my center and just get into the frame of mind, okay, I can do this,
I can enter in, right? That's one of the things I kind of feel like I want to develop this as well for when I teach, but we only have a limited amount of time when we go into classrooms and things like that. But I try to say, when I'm with youth, especially, like the feelings that you come in are val that are here in this space are valid. If you're feeling nervous, that's okay. If you're scared, also okay. Because I feel like also there needs to be a space for naming, and being allowed to say, we're going to have A lot of different ex emotions that come up. Each person might respond differently to that, and all of that is okay, especially around this topic.
Yeah, and we'll even sometimes say, like, if you need to take a break and go get a drink of water or step out, like, that's okay. Yeah, just really giving people that agency to participate in ways that feel healthy for them is important.
Which is also very different, right? Right now, with public schools, where I find it fascinating that now, it's like it's almost a gift to get to go to the bathroom, to have a break and go to the bathroom. Speaking of body agency, right? So I think that's
I
interesting.
think that's really something worth exploring is just like how are we, what messages are we sending kids about the autonomy of their own bodies in the public school system? That's a whole different
That's a whole nother podcast. That would be an
podcast
hour
topic,
in of itself.
think.
So, Marco, as a peer educator, how have the classes and educating your peers affected your relationships, and what have you learned from it?
It's been amazing. I was already pretty familiar with a lot of the concepts we went over in these sessions. So it was good to have that refresher and then to be put in a position where I can kind of help catch other people up that way. It's been amazing. I'm one of those people that likes to challenge what people think they know about the way things are in our society. Yeah, I remember watching football one time, seeing one of the coaches toss that red challenge flag because they didn't like the call that a ref made. So I saw that and I'm like, why don't I take this challenge flag concept a step further? Apply it to real life situations. Get creative a little bit. Think outside the box a little bit. Because there are some myths and misconceptions out there amongst folks with disabilities around comprehensive sex ed. And because I enjoy having these discussions with other people with disabilities. Being open and honest about these discussions, talking about things that are important to us, and anything I can do to kind of challenge other people's perceptions of folks with disabilities and what they think they can and can't do. That's a huge help.
Oh, that was gonna say. That's interesting what they can and cannot do. Do you feel like there's a lot of part of the myths that you're challenging are limitations? Is that one of the
I
things
would
that
say
you're talking
so.
about?
There was this PSA that just came out the other day. I'm not sure if anyone has seen it. Oh, you look like, yep. The lady with Down syndrome. You don't think I can order a margarita, so you don't give me one.
Yeah, it's the things that we automatically place, the stereotypes that we put on, right? That limit people of what they are able to do.
Right. You don't think that a person with a disability can have a romantic relationship, so they don't have a romantic relationship. Like that could be applied to that line of thinking.
What are some of the other, because you talked about like your red flag or the flags from the
The
football,
challenge flag.
the challenge flag. What are some of the other things that come up that people have talked to you about that you help challenge in their way of thinking?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily relevant to this discussion, but I know here in Maine we're pushing for Social Security reform because if two people with disabilities want to get married and they both receive Social Security, one of them ends up losing all their benefits. They call that the marriage penalty.
Oh, interesting. I wasn't even aware of that.
Right. You can't make too much money and still receive your benefits. So if you have combined income, that's too much. Even though it's not really, I mean, we're not
Yeah,
talking
it's a
about the money
catch-22. They say
campaign.
they want folks with disabilities to better themselves, but it feels like anytime we try, it feels
Then
like we
you're
have the legs cut out from underneath us.
right, then you're penalized as well. Interesting. But that's also another topic. This is, you
Yes,
all are
that's another
opening my
discussion for another
eyes.
time.
I know, but this is fascinating because I feel like there's a lot that's because, with sexuality, it's an intersection into so many other areas of our lives. And I feel like then it's like also you want to fall in love and have a relationship, but now you have to worry about all these other things in order to do
They
so.
make you jump through hoops.
Yeah, that doesn't feel very fair. Right? So what has Marco, what has been the most impactful for you in what you have learned about healthy relationships through your work and programming?
Think what's been most helpful for me personally is knowing what a healthy relationship should look like. Because I've given on too much of myself too soon in relationships before, and I didn't always get much back in those relationships. And I think part of it was because I was more in love with the idea of being in love. Because I was young back then. We're talking like late teens, early 20s. I was probably a little too caught up in what our society thinks someone my age should have been doing back then.
Oh yeah, aren't we all, right? The romantic scripts we've been given, right?
Like I have an idea in my head of how love ought to look like, but I've never really known for sure because I've never really known what to look for that way. There's nothing I've seen in TV or in movies really comes close to how true love really is, except maybe old Roseanne reruns.
Oh my gosh, right? That's too
Oh.
funny. That's so funny that you say that, because there is an aspect of that show that I really love, and I think it's because it does show more of a real experience in
Nobody's perfect.
relationships, right? Than what other sitcoms show. Like, totally.
A great reference. I like
That just rang bells for me for sure. So what kind of guidance, Anna, do you give to those who support and care for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities?
it. Yeah, I was thinking a little bit about that with, talking about some of the barriers when people do have a relationship, and like the financial barriers to that for people with disabilities. But then you also just have caregivers who will say, "I don't want this relationship to happen," and shut it down. And that's really challenging. So, helping to navigate some of that, helping to open caregivers' eyes and parents' eyes that, like, your child or the person that you're caring for is a sexual being and may want to have these relationships. And how can you support them in a healthy way? Because a lot of times, if it's not supported in a healthy way, it might be secretive, or it might get, then it leads to more vulnerability, and it could lead to some really unhealthy situations. But yeah, we also just really provide support for educators, administrators, parents, staff, like direct support professionals. We do a lot of just education and training because it's helpful to sort of have a conversation, kind of get some common language with some of these topics so that people feel empowered. I mean, we know, and I think you kind of alluded to earlier, that in the United States, we don't always do the best job of providing sex education to people. So when these support people come in and don't have a lot of sex ed themselves and don't feel comfortable with the topic, that can be really hard, or they may have trauma around this topic. So just really kind of helping people, give them the tools to have the conversations, and just encouraging people to start somewhere. I mean, Marco brought up healthy relationships, and it seems simple, yet it's not. Like, we don't spend enough time just talking about what is a healthy relationship. And that feels like an accessible point for a lot of people. We don't have to dive straight into talking about body parts and STIs and things like that. Like, we can start the conversation just talking about what makes a healthy relationship. And it's okay to not have the answers to all questions. Like, we really encourage people to just, like, it's okay to say to a group of people, "I'm not sure. I can, like, do some more research and get back to you." Like, we don't have to know everything. We don't have to be perfect before we start these conversations. So that's a lot of what we talk about with people. And we also provide free support calls quarterly, for one for educators, and then a separate one for parent and caregiver folks. And we have a parent and caregiver educator on our team who really, she is both a sex educator and a parent of a child with a pretty significant disability. So she's able to really connect with parents and provide support in a really concrete way to folks, which is really cool. So yeah, we just really want to be here as a resource. There are great video resources that we have, but also there's so many out there. I mean, there's so many different tools, and just honestly, we're happy to support people, so feel free to reach out to us.
What if there are parents who are listening who have younger children with some disabilities? What would you encourage them to start doing and or saying or thinking about around sexual health?
Yeah, I think we really, one starting place is just being an askable parent or an askable caregiver. So when kids come to them with a question that sometimes we might be surprised by, and our first reaction is like, where did you hear that? Or who told you that? Or, rather than jumping to that reactive place, really trying to be like, oh, wow, I'm so glad you asked me that question. Like, let's talk more about it. So really take out the shame and judgment so that you can establish from a young age that you're a safe person to have those conversations with. I think that's really huge. And we also have a newer curriculum called Open Conversations, and that's for ages 4 to 10. Again, designed with people with disabilities in mind, but could be for anyone, and with a lot of like visual supports and social stories and things like that. Because I think, yeah, just starting the conversation, and again, starting with healthy relationships. I feel like a broken record, but which is just so true. That it can be really accessible. It doesn't have to be scary.
Well, I think with it's, I feel like sometimes, like when I've talked to people and they say, well, how do I talk about sex? And when you talk, when you do break it down to like, we'll start, it's so vast, right? And in order to even get to that space where we want them, where having sex is a place where you can feel comfort and safety. In order to get to that space, you have to have conversations and understand healthy relationships and what they look like. And so then you can start from the minimum, like the smallest thing of like, how do we start talking to each other? And what does that look like? And because there's so many things just in communication. I mean, you could have like 15 classes on communication, right? In general. And then we could have 15 more classes on consent and all the feelings that come up with that, as well as, you know, what does it mean to be in a relationship with a person whose value is different than my value? And how do we navigate that and things like that? And so, yeah, when I tell people that similar thing, it kind of, I've noticed where they go, oh, yeah, that's right. I can start there. I can start there.
Well, and just that, like, one of our biggest messages is my body belongs to me, and then therefore somebody else's body belongs to them. And I think that's a very developmentally appropriate conversation with little ones. Like, it's such a huge area of growth. I know from my own kid back in the day, just like helping them navigate that consent piece of like, you are in charge of your body, so you have your rights, but also, your friend and your mom and everybody should have some space and some body autonomy. So,
What do you think for the caregivers is the biggest fear that they have?
I think just safety. Like they just want their, and it's interesting. Like, from young to adult child, right? Like, we don't have a word in English for adult child, so it feels really weird to, but anyway. So like from the young to all the way through an adult child, it's like just they want them to be safe. I also think, they want happiness for their child, right? Like, what do you think, Marco, about that question?
Well, it is kind of a loaded question in a way. I mean, it can be tough as a parent, knowing where to start. But we got to start somewhere, you know?
So one of the things that I've been loving and I feel has opened the door really to having more of these conversations is the Netflix show Love on the Spectrum, because I think it makes it pretty real. You know, I worked with a lot of people who had Down syndrome, and who had different intellectual disabilities, and their capacity to love was great. And their capacity to love and want to have romantic relationships was also wonderful and beautiful and great to see. And so when I started to see the show, was so excited because it does, I think, show the way that, like you had said, Marco, like, we want to love and we want to be in relationships with one another. And so, what are your reactions and reflections on that show for either of you?
I don't think I've seen enough of it to really form an opinion one way or the other, but I like the premise, I guess.
You like the premise.
Yeah, I think I've watched some mostly the Australia version, which I think came out first. And a little bit of Down for Love, which is also Down syndrome specific. Also in Australia, I believe the first one. Yeah, I mean, I think I was excited to see that this was, something that was becoming a part of a mainstream kind of conversation through a Netflix show. And definitely like saw dynamics and things that I like personally identified with, and but then also like could identify with, seeing like oh yeah, that reminds me of students I've worked with over the years and things like that. I think that search for love, that trying to connect and have relationships with people is a universal thing. And I think, not everyone has the privilege of having many people with disabilities in their life. So for people who hadn't ever thought about this, I think that show is a great like gateway, introduction, conversation starter. I also know like some people had concerns about it potentially being sort of exploitative of like, people's, anytime you have reality TV, right?
Oh
There can
yeah.
be like an aspect of like, these are people's emotions and their love and and to have it displayed on TV, and that's complex. But from what I've read from participants on the show, like their actual voices, they were really excited about the opportunity and really felt like it was handled in a really good
Oh,
way.
that's good. Yeah.
But yeah, I think, I think with anything that is reality television, it's
Right.
like
Yeah.
you have to take it with a
So
grain of
you
salt.
take it.
True.
Of course. It's true. Well, it generated lots of good conversations for my son and I, because I actually think the demonstration of consent on those shows is excellent, absolutely excellent. And so my son loves watching it, and we will sit there and I say, you see how they're just so direct in that show with consent, and I absolutely love it.
Yes. I also think I appreciate many of the participants in that show are really forthright and honest in a way that sometimes my experiences in more neurotypical dating have been less honest, I guess, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So what do you both want to change about a world today around conversations on sexual health, education, and wellness? What's the biggest things that you would like to change?
I just really want everyone to have access to information about their health, their sexual health, their bodies. I think there are barriers in place for people with intellectual disabilities that we can help, break down and deconstruct. And so I want to see a world where there's less gatekeeping of information, like that regardless of ability, people should have access to this information. And then like looking at like how do we make this accessible? Like, does somebody need sign language, or do they need visual supports in the education? Do they need review? Sometimes people just need to hear the information more than once. So just like my dream is for things to be actually equitable and accessible to all people.
Yeah, agreed. What do
Yeah.
you think, Marco?
My big takeaway from this is discussions around sex ed amongst people with disabilities, they shouldn't have to be embarrassing. I remember being 19 years old, looking through a dirty magazine, showing my mom an advertisement for male enhancement supplements, because I was a bit self-conscious about how I measured up down there back then. I'm very fortunate to have that kind of relationship with my mom, where I feel like I can turn to her when it comes to recurring adult themes that come up in my life. Not everyone with a disability has someone like that they can turn to for those discussions. So my hope is that we can eliminate the stigma around these discussions, get folks with disabilities more involved in those discussions. That's my hope.
And I think also just the, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, Anna, when you're talking about just the access and being able to have the information, and I'm like, and without it being stigmatized and weaponized and things like that, because that's what's happening now. It's like whenever, especially with what the culture today, and people wanting to have knowledge about their bodies, access to understanding how they work together and how to be safe and stuff. And to have that being attacked the way it is, it's just so upsetting, you know, because I always tell kids when they ask me, why do we have to have this education? You know, when we do puberty education, and I say, because you deserve it. You deserve it. You deserve knowing about your body. You deserve learning about how to start talking to one another and what it means to listen to your body. Because I always tell them, your biggest teacher is your body. So if your body is feeling uncomfortable, then you need to think about that, you know?
Yeah, we do ourselves a great disservice taking the abstinence-only approach, I think.
Oh, for, yeah, I agree. I agree. One of the questions that I ask, well, first, before I do this, is there anything else that you just really want to discuss around this topic that you feel like people need to know or something that's impacted you?
I
Well,
just think.
consent keeps coming up. Consent keeps coming up in our discussions, and I find it kind of annoying that it's been reduced to a tagline to sell overpriced lingerie. Like, it's not enough for consent to be sexy. It needs to be mandatory.
Yeah, and I think it's more complex than we may, right? It's a complex issue, and I think there's so many layers to it. And yeah, when we simplify it and then put it like a tagline onto it, it's like doing a disservice. The questions I ask all of my guests is, what story are you reframing today? So we'll start with you, Anna, and then go to you, Marco.
Yeah, I think the first story that I really have been thinking about reframing, and by the way, I love that question. It's such a like good, juicy question. But just I really want to reframe the myth that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities are not sexual. Like people become desexualized. And so I really want to reframe that story, and acknowledge and encourage people to explore for themselves and just, you know, for all of us to understand that all people can be sexual beings and it's different for everyone. But anyone, you know, could be, regardless of ability, anybody could be straight or gay or asexual, being able to express their gender. Like, it's not about disability, it's about just we're human.
I agree with that. Folks with disabilities should be afforded the time and the space to explore sexuality, gender identity with supportive, non-judgmental people if that's something they decide they want to do. I'm usually pretty secure in who I am as a man, even though I lean more femme in some ways. I personally did not feel very desirable during COVID, not at least not until I started exploring queerness and questioning where I stand that way. In terms of reframing my own story, I remember seeing people I've gone to school with, they're getting married, they're having kids. Part of me wants to be like, when do I get on some of that? And it's something I struggled with for the longest time, struggling with how subjective normal really is and coming to terms with the fact that maybe my normal doesn't have to be what everyone else's normal is, chalk it up to this whole keeping up with the Joneses thing, feeling like I'm missing out on something.
Yeah, I like that you brought up the normal. I often draw a little box on the whiteboard when I teach, and I said, this is what we consider normal. And I said, so I want everyone in this room to get into this box. Can you do that? I was like, hop in. Can you get in there? And then they go, no. And I was like, right, because normal's not small like that. And then what is normal? And what have we classified normal to be? And so I said, I want you to smash normal. Right? Smash
Right.
normal.
Reframe that relationship story could look like anything. It makes me think too of how we put romantic relationships up on a pedestal when like we can have all sorts of intimacy with friendships and like the deep family relationships, things like that. I think that that's so rich.
Oh, yeah. I was just at actually Pub Theology, and we were talking about, and because it was during St. Patrick's Day, and we talked about, so this is going to date this podcast, but we talked about Anam Cara, which is a soul friend, and it talked about the deep intimacy that you can have with friends or like people who you just connect on a soul level, and how important those relationships are. And I think about that, and some of my most intimate relationships are some with my friends who I've had since childhood or from college, who just really understand and know who I am. And I think one of the disservices that we do, speaking of normal or whatnot, is this, I think we put things on a timeline of when we're supposed to have things figured out and when a relationship is supposed to come our way and things like that. And I think there is a disservice that we are giving ourselves when we do that, which then I think in many ways, how can I say this? In many ways, it leads us to grief later on for many people.
Yeah, feeling like I've wasted my prime dating years kind of riding the pine or otherwise stuck in dead end dynamics. Feeling like time is running out, you know?
When we can find love at any age, right? And that, and like knowing who we are more so at different times is part of that journey, right?
Yeah, and I think that also kind of harkens back to that connecting with our bodies too, and really knowing what actually feels good to us and what we need and what we want. And my experience with that is, as I've gotten older and as I've done more, learning and meeting people, it's taught me that how important that is, how vital that is, that connecting to our bodies is a huge part of all of this.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Marco and Anna, I just really appreciated you coming on the show today, and I thank you for all of your wisdom. And I am putting all of your information in the show notes so people can find you and see the organization, Marco, that you are a part of, and Anna about Mad Hatter Wellness. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a delight.